Good evening, everyone. I'm Lino Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. I hope 2019 is off to a good start for you. Well, with a new year often comes resolutions and big decisions. A very common New Year's resolution is diet and weight loss for women and men alike. And this often includes dieting. Well, get this. In America alone, approximately 45 million people go on a diet each year and spend an estimated $33 billion on weight loss products. Researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles say 80% of dieters will gain back the weight within 2 years. Health experts say dieting should address more than just weight loss to be more effective and sustainable. How so? Well, we will discuss this and more on the program today. Joining us from our VOA studios in New York is health and wellness expert Felicia Stoller, a registered dietitian nutritionist, expert consultant in disease prevention, wellness, and healthful living, and author of the book Living Skinny in Fat Jeans. Felicia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, the title of your book is quite interesting. Living skinny in fat jeans. What do you mean?
Well, you know, there's a funny story behind the title. You know, people are always blaming their genes for why they're overweight, right? Or why they're fat. And I tell a cute story in the book about a cartoon I saw. You know, we always like to use cartoons when we do PowerPoint presentations. And it was this person sitting across from the doctor and it says, "Doc, you don't understand. Fat genes run in my family." And the doctor says, "No, you don't understand. Nobody in your family runs." So, you know, if you think about that, We blame our genes for why we're overweight instead of taking responsibility for our actions. Mm. So
taking responsibility for our actions, where does it start?
Yeah. Well, I know, right? I mean, it's food, it's physical activity, it's beverages, it's sleep, it's stress. I mean, you know, some of us have a hard time managing stress. Sometimes we have things that are put upon us that we don't have a lot of control over. So it's a question of how we process it and deal with it, right?
So what would you say, Felicia, according to scientists, between diet and lack of exercise, what is the culprit here? Is it the not enough activities, physical activities, or is it like in majority what we eat?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what we eat because, you know, you're talking about weight, but then we also talk about health and health outcomes. So, you know, we are technically eating more calories. We have access to food 24/7. You know, everywhere you go from a gas station to the coffee shops, there's food. It's not just beverages. There's food. Movie theaters don't just have popcorn and candy. Now you can get real food at these places. So, you know, we have access to food all the time. The question is whether or not we're eating it all the time. And, you know, people are up late. They're online a lot. You know, we are just bombarded with, you know, opportunities to be awake. And so then the question is whether or not you're eating calories, drinking calories. Let's not forget, a lot of people drink a lot of calories as well. You know, shakes, juices, cleanses. People think because they work out, they need protein shakes. I mean, most people that are getting too many calories.
Yeah.
And they're definitely not doing enough physical activity.
Where does this idea of a protein shake or even sports juice came? Because I remember back then, I mean, we didn't hear anything about sports juice. I grew up in Africa. There was nothing such as sports drink. But people were exercising and were doing fine. But all of these things, you know, I'm not trying to bash an industry or anything, but...
I will.
But I just feel like we just have to pay attention to all the fat that is being created to around different products that is pushing people to consume sugar in everything, right?
Well, you know, listen, the sports beverage industry made everybody think they needed it. I mean, that's what advertising does, right? They make you think that they create a demand for something that people didn't necessarily need, as you said before. But then the flip side is that you could look at science and say, well, hey, science figured out that if you replace electrolytes and carbohydrates when you're doing certain types of exercise, you can perform better, right? Especially for endurance events or for certain sports that last over a long period of time. So, you know, there are some benefits benefits to doing it. There's a whole science behind sports nutrition and working with people for performance enhancement, mm-hmm. you know, not using things like steroids. You know, you can use food and exercise and sleep appropriately to improve that and some micronutrients. Mm-hmm. But again, like you were talking about diet, I always say like the word diet stands for did I eat that, you know, to,
you know,
people, and fad diets are just fast acting diets. So there's a lot of fad diets and, you know, famous people come up with diets. We follow things that celebrities do. If it works for them, it works for us. But what's the science behind it? You know, whether or not it's going to be effective for long-term weight loss. And, you know, I look at things like diabetes, you know, that every time a celebrity dies of diabetes, for every one celebrity that dies from complications of diabetes, there's probably 1,000 non-celebrities that have died from complications of diabetes. And I look at that being one disease in particular that is really preventable, especially type 2 diabetes. It is so tightly connected to
lifestyle,
being overweight, mm-hmm. you know, overweight and obesity. And, you know, there are people that when they do lose a significant amount of weight, the diabetes goes away. Mm. I mean, and it does accelerate heart disease. It does accelerate kidney disease. I know you were talking about that in another segment. You know, it just does so much damage by having uncontrolled blood sugars in our body. We weren't meant to do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that I find very disturbing is speaking about diet, right? 80% of dieters will gain back the weight within just 2 years. That's a bit discouraging.
Right. Well, there's something called the National Weight Loss Registry. It's I forget which school in Colorado it's out of. It's a group of successful losers that have lost 25 pounds or more and kept it off for 5 years or more. And what they found that they had in common is that they did some physical activity every day. They ate moderate amounts of protein. They kept track of their weight. You know, they weighed themselves regularly. And, you know, they ate a lot of plants. You know, they did not eat a high-fat, high-protein diet. They ate more carbohydrates with smaller amounts of fat and protein. So if you want to look at, you know, long-term health outcomes and dieting, you know, that's you know, when they looked at what those people had in common, that's what they had in common. Mm. But, you know, what is often the case is that most diets that people do are unsustainable, or they don't find a way to integrate physical activity into their life in a way that they can maintain that. You know, or they make excuses for why they can't do it. And we live in an excuse-driven culture. And, you know, I do say that the healthy choice is the easy choice. You just need to make it.
Yeah, I guess that's pretty straightforward, right? Listen, when we talk about, I just feel like even the word diet.
I know, I hate that word.
Yeah.
Because it makes people think it's something you go on and off of, where really it's the sum of your habits and behaviors when it comes to food and beverages.
Yeah, so because diet sounds so punctual, like something you do at a certain time. But we should really look at the big picture, lifestyle changes, right. in terms of what you eat.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm board certified in lifestyle medicine, which is really important. It's like the best way for me to integrate everything that I love about promoting health, right? Mm-hmm. So it is about what you eat. I do recommend that people eat more flexitarian, eat predominantly plant-based foods with small amounts of animal source protein. U.S. News and World Report just came out with their top diets for 2019. I know we don't like that word, the D word, but they said the Mediterranean diet, the DASH diet, and the flexitarian diet were the best diets, not just for weight loss, but for health, you know? And then on top of that, if you want to add in fasting, which is, you know, intermittent fasting, there's different types of fasting. There's intermittent fasting where you could go like a whole day where you don't eat. Like I met a server at a restaurant who told me he doesn't eat one day a week. He just does a water fast. And he lost 60 pounds over a year. That's amazing.
Wow. I wanted us to clarify something because we have a global audience, and our audience in like I know in some part of the world, like in sub-Saharan Africa, sometimes when people hear fasting, they think it has a spiritual or religious base.
Well, right. Five major religions of the world actually use fasting as part of their practice, right?
Yeah,
for different reasons. So if you think about it, fasting's been part of human culture and evolution for a long time. Even the whole, feast or famine, you know, we would have periods where we would eat when food was available. And then there were times when food was not available. And thank goodness we had that adaptive mechanism. It's what they call the thrifty gene. So we are able to slow down our metabolism so that we can survive. But what's amazing is that there's research that's looked at this and said, so we've survived as humans being able to have periods where we don't eat. But what they're looking at now is, wow, what happens when we have these periods of fasting in that the body can actually repair itself? It's a process called autophagy, where the body, when it's in a fasted state, will knock out underperforming cells, and it will improve the stimulation and the generation or regeneration of stem cells, which basically help us to heal. So where the science is going, and you know, they look at it in animal studies first, which does not equal human studies, but we're looking at a lot of times what's done in animals can be done in humans. They're looking at reversing things like type 1 and type 2 diabetes. They're looking at things like diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, and dementia, and of course heart disease, right? So, you know, how is it, and certain types of cancers also respond well to fasting. So, you know, and there's different styles of fasting. So there's time-restricted eating where you only eat during, or time-restricted eating where you eat during either 8 hours a day, 10 hours, or 12 hours a day. And then there's also something called prolonged fasting, which was developed by Dr. Walter Longo, where he was doing this prolonged fast where people were doing a 5-day water fast. And what happened is, you know, animals don't drop out of studies the way humans do. And humans had a very tough time doing 5 consecutive days of a water fast. So what he created was this program where people could eat, it's called a fasting mimicking diet, where people can eat a small amount of calories over 5 days. So the stomach sees food, but the cells see fasting. So you get that autophagy without the hunger. So it's amazing. So there's a company, it's called El Nutra, and the product is called Prolon FMD for fasting mimicking diet. If people want to look that up online. And it's really, you know, where the research is going with that is just fascinating. And I'm very anxious to see where the science will continue to go with this. I have colleagues that are physicians at work in the metabolic space. And, you know, there was a gentleman who actually won the Nobel Prize in 2016 for his work on autophagy. So I think this is really the way of the future, you know, beyond drugs. You know, I know the pharmaceutical companies want to find a drug, but wow, if we can, you know, how cool if we can heal ourselves from within.
So let's, again, these are good, very, very good information. And I just wanted to, mention that fasting in some contexts is very much associated with religious practices. But what you are talking about here is fasting as an approach to dieting, as a way to have less food intake. It has nothing to do with people's right. religious practices.
Correct. Yeah. And it's about longevity. It's about living longer and more vibrantly with less disease.
Mm-hmm. And so also when it comes to different types of dieting because we've over the year we've seen so many ways, so many suggestions about diet, protein based diet, even some diets where you eat meat only and you will lose weight. And so there's
but you'll gain it back.
It seems like that again. The word diet, we're not very fond of it. That it has a lot to do with some fads, right? So,
right.
It's also important to mention that with dieting, different type of the way people will change their lifestyle and the way they eat, they want to make sure that medically they are fit to follow that, because you have people with medical condition. Not everybody can do everything, right?
Well, right. And, you know, depending on types of medications that people take, they have to be mm-hmm. very careful if they do that. Even for religious purposes, you know, when you're fasting, a lot of religions, you know, are very clear about if you're taking certain medications, you should not be fasting. Mm-hmm. So even for religious purposes. So, yes, you should do it under the guidance of a physician.
Physicians, yeah.
But if a physician is unaware, so here's the challenge, is that a lot of physicians don't learn a lot about nutrition. So when you go to ask them about their, about their experience with that and their knowledge, I might say, I don't know anything about that. So on the one hand, it's beneficial, but on the other hand, somebody may have a tough time with it. So, you know, for that type of situation, I would definitely tell somebody to, you know, maybe start with something like time-restricted eating or the intermittent fasting, where they, you know, can do that for 12 hours a day pretty safely, where they're only eating from, let's say, 7 in the morning till 7 at night, or 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm. And that's,
you know, and then watching your food intake, because, you know, again, like not eating excessively and not eating foods that are, you know, have low nutrient profile, meaning like they're just filled with fat and sugar and they don't have any other benefit.
Yes, yes.
Like, absolutely. Don't eat a whole gallon of ice cream.
It's because
it's in the window.
It tastes good, but it's not good for you, right?
Right.
It's. I find it ironic how a lot of time good food that tastes good, we have to be careful. I mean, you have good food that is not bad, high in fat and sugar, you know. I know some vegetables that taste very good. But anyways, we are going to take a short break and continue our conversation with Felicia Stoller to get some insight on proper nutrition and sustainable diet, if I can use that word. So we'll be right back in a short moment. But now it's time for the news with Bonsa Tufa.
Thank you, Lenore. The Rwandan government is the latest on the continent to begin enforcing its ban on cosmetic products used for lightening or bleaching skin. Police in Rwanda have confiscated thousands of products since the closing weeks of 2018. Rwandan President Paul Kagame catalyzed the crackdown when he weighed in on recent discussion on social media about the growing use of skin lightening products with a tweet saying, "Quite unhealthy, among other things, includes use of prohibited chemicals." African countries like Ghana, Kenya, and South Africa also have prohibitive laws, but like Rwanda, they struggle to come between willing buyers and smugglers operating in a global industry worth billions of dollars. The World Health Organization estimates that at least 4 in every 10 African women bleach their skin. People who drink lots of sugar-sweetened soda and fruit juices may be more likely to develop chronic kidney disease than those who don't. That is according to a U.S. study published in the Clinical Journal of the American Society of Nephrology. The study led by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health examined survey data on beverage consumption among over 3,000 men and women who were 54 years old on average and didn't have kidney disease. They found that drinking mainly sodas and sweetened fruit drinks was associated with a 61% higher risk of kidney disease. Taken on its own, soda was associated with a 9% greater risk of kidney disease, and higher intakes of beer was also associated with the greater odds of kidney disease. The researchers say high sugar of any kind can lead to weight gain and insulin resistance and elevated blood pressure. These factors then put stress on the kidney and can accelerate loss of kidney function over time. And finally, heart attack survivors who step up their exercise efforts may live longer than those who remain inactive. A Swedish study suggests that compared to patients who were inactive for the first 10 to 12 months after their heart attack, patients who were active during that whole time were 71% less likely to die during the 4-year study. Researchers reported in the Journal of the American Heart Association that people who were inactive at first but then increased their activity levels over time were 59% less likely to die during the study than their constantly sedentary counterparts. Physical activity has long been linked to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease and premature death after events like a heart attack or stroke. The current study, however, offers fresh evidence of the potential to improve survival odds by exercising after a heart attack or by trying to keep up with some workouts even if a previous level of exercise is difficult to maintain. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is diet and weight loss beyond weight loss, actually. Joining us from our radio studios in New York is expert Felicia Stoller. She's a registered dietitian nutritionist, expert consultant in disease prevention, wellness, and healthful living, and author of the book, Living Skin in Fat Jeans. Now, Felicia, I know that one of the things that you even mentioned it earlier, the importance of exercising when we talk about diet and weight loss, exercise is such an important part of it. Now, is there a way that we can find out how much exercise people must do versus the intake of calories? How do we determine how much exercise to do and how much food?
They should be eating. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of recommending that people count calories because I find that that's really difficult to do. You know, there's this whole movement about like eating more mindfully. So thinking about like half your plate being, you know, three quarters of your plate being plant-based and one quarter of it being, you know, animal-sourced protein. So, you know, there's that when it comes to food and sort of like learning appropriate portions, because what we've also learned is that people don't know what an appropriate portion is. So, I mean, there's plenty of resources online that give people, you know, access to that information. I mean, we use in science, we use something called a Harris-Benedict equation, where you literally type in your height, your weight, your gender, and I don't remember if your age is part of it, but it actually calculates out. You put in your physical activity level, it tells you how many calories you should be taking in a day, it tells you what your basal metabolic rate is, and then you figure out, you know, physical activity from there, what you should be doing. I mean, you know, it's a matter of what you have access to in terms of time and how you can integrate physical activity into your day. Uh-huh. Workstations are very popular now. And, you know, in the United States versus in other parts of the country, like we use cars a lot to get around, whereas in other places people use public transportation, they walk, they bike. You know, there's some countries where cycling's really big. Like I've been to Copenhagen and everybody rides a bicycle there. You know, and cycling is really big in some European countries. I don't know about in African countries, but, you know, a lot of times people don't have cars, so they're, you know, forced to walk and move. So I think that that is key, you know, finding ways to do more exercise. There's an app that people can get called the 7-Minute Workout, where literally you can work out for 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I wouldn't say just do 7 minutes a day, but maybe you do it a few times a day where you could literally work out anywhere. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I travel a lot for work and, you know, people always ask me how I stay in shape. And I walk, I do things in hotels or, you know, airports. I do physical activity whenever and wherever I can get it in. I'm always trying to, you know, if the hotel has a pool, I bring a bathing suit. You know, that's easy to travel with, you know, and a pair of comfortable walking shoes. Mm-hmm. Just trying to get more physical activity in however you can. Even, you know, right now where I'm sitting, but I could stand and, you know, and I could be doing some exercises using your groceries when you're coming into your house. You know, if you're carrying a bag, can you, you know, do bicep curls with it? Or student with a backpack, can you do some squats and lunges with your heavy school, you know, school books on behind your back? Yeah, the other ways to add some exercise in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, there are people such as myself, you know, we work in front of with the computer sitting all day. So you will suggest that we stand up and walk around quite often?
Yes. Yes. And actually, one of the things that I did in my doctoral research was in worksite wellness. We suggested that the participants in our study got up for every hour that they were at work, that they walked for 5 minutes. So in the United States, people traditionally work an 8-hour workday. So you can accumulate 40 minutes of physical activity if you do that during your 8-hour workday. So, you know, if you think about how many people used to go out and have a cigarette every hour, you can do a health break for yourself and do something healthy and good for yourself.
Wow, that's a good tip. I can use that, definitely. Because sometimes you're sitting in front of the computer, you don't even realize, you know, you're just sitting there.
You know, or can you have walking, talking meetings? You know, that's something that we used to do. That's something I do with my patients where we'll go to a park, or if the weather's nice, we'll just walk around the block instead of sitting in the office, because, you know, we can walk and talk. We don't have to sit and look at each other across a chair and a sofa, you know. And I have one client, sometimes we like to go biking together and we bike and talk. So, you know, and there are a lot of parks and playgrounds where people can go and do some recreation. You know, how many parents take kids to a playground and then just sit? Mm-hmm. If you've ever tried pumping your legs on a swing, that's a great leg workout.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I've lost a lot of my upper body strength when I see kids on the monkey bars, you know. I can't hold myself up and go from bar to bar. So, you know, there's
that's a tough one.
So, you know, I mean, just trying to do some of the activities that the kids are doing too.
Mm-hmm. So let's say someone says, you know, New Year's resolution is to lose let's say, maybe 20 pounds in 3 months? Is it even realistic? What is the healthiest way to lose weight and not gain it back within 2 years? I know we went over it in different ways, but realistically, when we talk about losing weight, is it 4 pounds to every 2 weeks that is healthy? Or?
I mean, it's really supposed to be no more than 2 pounds per week. For weight loss, is considered appropriate and healthy. But, you know, look, there are people that have surgical procedures where that accelerates that weight loss. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, we were talking before about that fasting mimicking diet. Some people might lose 5 to 8 pounds during that 5-day period, but they might gain some of it back, like a little bit of it back. But then if you do it again the next month, then it just keeps bringing you down. It like literally like resets your metabolism. So that's where, like, you know, it's hard to give absolute numbers, but I can tell you for the longest time, it was really recommended that you don't lose more than 2 pounds per week, but you can. I mean, somebody who's morbidly obese, they'll lose that weight very quickly. I mean, that's something that I found in my research study. You know, the people that had the most weight to lose would drop the most amount of weight when they just started changing their habits, where, you know, we all know those friends of ours that just want to lose that extra 5 or 10 pounds. And those people will tell you it's very hard to lose that weight. It's very difficult for people like that to lose that weight. They're lucky if they lose a pound a week.
Wow. And there's this belief that I know there are a lot of times there are some misconceptions or myth around fast dieting, but there is this thing about women that at a certain age it's harder for women to lose weight.
I'm at that age.
So it is true.
You could say it. I'm in menopause. I'm proud of it. I'm going to be 52. I'll rock it. I don't care. And I want to get back to my premenopause weight because, you know, it happened to me too. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I knew this was coming. I've been counseling for 20 years. And a lot of the women that come to my practice are women that are, you know, perimenopause or in menopause or postmenopause. And they complain about their weight. I mean, it's a fact of life. What happens is our body composition changes and our hormones change. So because our hormones shift, you know, estrogen's cardioprotective. It keeps fat in the lower part of our body. And then when we produce less of it, we find that we end up with belly fat. Nobody likes that. So, you know, and a lot of that's due to hormones and, you know, and inactivity. So if you're not using your muscles, you know, we look at biologically active tissue. So it's muscle mass, bone density. You know, those are, and our organs, right? Because our brain uses energy too, and our hearts and our lungs and our, you know, all of our organs use energy. So, you know, it's a matter of, you know, use it or lose it. So continuing to move, understanding that hormones do shift. And, you know, something else with, you know, women and aging is that a lot of times, you know, we've told people you can have a glass of wine every night, you know, but people aren't drinking a 4-ounce pour. They're pouring like 8 to 10 ounces. And, you know, what happens is as you get older, metabolizing that becomes more difficult and it ends up, you end up with more fat. So a lot of people were like, well, I thought the doctor said I need to have that. I'm like, well, if you knock that out, you'd be surprised how many calories, you know, you'd be saving and you lose weight. And I've, you know, I've said that to a lot of my patients too, that, you know, you need to knock out that glass of wine every night. And then they're like, up, you were right. I hate to give it up, but you were right, you know. And I'm like, well, which do you want more? Do you want the relaxation from the wine or do you want to lose the pounds?
Yeah.
You know, it's your choice. I can't make that for you.
Yeah. So I guess it's really on an individual basis at some point where, you know, what you need, what each person needs to lose the weight can, you know, will differ, may differ depending on where they are and, you know, their real situation.
But I do recommend that people try to make small changes in their lifestyle, that some of these fad diets that are out there, they provide fast weight loss, but then, as you said, people do gain the weight back. They're not sustainable, and it's frustrating. So what are some small changes you can do, right? Like, can you drink more water? If you don't drink water now, can you drink one glass a day for a week, and then maybe the next week add 2 glasses of water? If you're only eating 1 serving of vegetables a day, can you add another serving and do 2 servings of vegetables? You know, like, make the small changes. It would be great if everybody could do it to the extreme at once. But that's, you know, that's where people have a hard time.
Okay, so we're going to wrap in a few seconds. Final word, a word of advice to end it.
The healthy choice is the easy choice. You just need to make it.
Oh, yes, we have to go for it. Thank you so much, Felicia, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And that was Felicia Stoller. She's a dietitian, nutritionist, and author. Thank you to all of you for joining us. For more on the show, facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. And we will keep the conversation going there. Thank you to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa and around and those around the world who are listening to us via the net. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, in Washington, with producer Daniel Brown and Bonsa Tufa, with the news and engineer Peter Henley. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News.